This is More in the Morning on News Talk 1010 Toronto.
So it's very funny. Last week, I sent an email to my Aunt Barbara's daughter, my cousin, Rhonda. And I said, is it wrong for me to say I'm looking forward to this weekend? And she wrote back and said, no, me too. And it's a very rare occasion that our family is all together, and pretty well everybody was present and accounted for this weekend. Although I will say my brother, who I hope isn't listening right now, I've always described my brother as a chaos vortex. So his son missed the flight, so he didn't get to come. And then my brother, I don't know how this happens. My brother arrives at the car rental desk and he doesn't have his license. His driver's license. So they wouldn't give him the car, obviously. So he calls a friend and borrows the friend's car, which, of course, this is in Montreal, involves driving all over, running all over Montreal and then getting the car, then driving to Ottawa, and then using that car to shuttle us around, except that the back seat was so stuffed with stuff, it was almost unusable. But, you know, that was the weekend, and that's my brother. And then my sister, as we, you know how everybody at the reception after the funeral says, that was a good service. It really was, actually. A couple of Wesleyan hymns, three tributes. My sister did a psalm, and she does that stuff really well. There was a Bible reading. The minister was convivial and didn't have, there's two things that can go wrong at a funeral as concerns the prelate. One is they have that very, no one will ever forget. You know, they apparently train you at divinity school about how to talk like that. But the other one is the minister who knows nothing about the person in question and has to keep checking their notes. Barbara, her son, Tim. Anyway, this guy was great. But walking out of the funeral, my sister turns to me and says, I think that was better than Dad's. So there you go. All right, let's turn to more serious affairs. And the time is 8:08.
I am sorry for what had happened, but I never meant any of this to happen to this day. I see that Canada didn't let injustice to happen. So I thank Canada. Thank you very much.
That is Umar Zamir, who made a statement following his acquittal in the death of a Toronto police constable. It was happened in the early hours after July 1st, so technically it was the 2nd of July, 2021. Here we are almost 3 years later, and he was acquitted. Through this trial, we've talked on several occasions with Toronto lawyer Monty McGregor, who, in addition to being a lawyer, has been following the trial very closely. He's here now. It's nice to have you back.
Thanks, John. Good morning. Good to be here.
I can't imagine being a lawyer that you're surprised at the verdict.
No, not at all. I think myself, most of my colleagues, virtually everybody that I spoke to, even Crown attorneys, all concluded sort of right before the verdict. We actually were worried about the verdict, given that it was taking several days to get to, because I think everybody thought it was going to be relatively quick for a not guilty. So I'm not surprised at all after watching all the evidence and seeing the case.
Okay, so I want to test a theory with you. A lot of people say the case never should have been brought in the first place. But I actually think because it involved the death of a police officer, and they were kind of in a maelstrom of confusion and violence in many ways, that the Crown had to press the case, if only to get to an acquittal, in order to clear the file.
I think that's a fair theory. I think because you have to remember that this trial wasn't the first time the evidence gets heard. They have a preliminary inquiry for serious matters like homicides and murders, and that's where you have a hearing in advance to test the evidence. So what those three eyewitness police officers testified to, this wasn't the first time. It was actually known at the preliminary inquiry. The expert reconstructionist testified at the preliminary inquiry. And so the Crown attorneys left. You know, you're the idea is to have 12 members of the community decide when it's contentious. And here, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions about whether or not he should have gone ahead on a murder charge. But there was evidence by one of the officers, Officer Forbes, that claimed she had identified herself as a police officer, that Officer Northrup had done that as well. So as long as that's in contention, then I agree with you. It appears that it might not be the strongest evidence because it was contradicted by the objective video surveillance and the crass reconstructionist. So it's still, I think, you know, lots of people have questions about the nature of the charge. Maybe it should have just been a dangerous driving caused death as opposed to a murder, but the evidence needs to be adjudicated sometimes. That's the way the criminal justice system works.
And what about these three police officers? Because, you know, the judge effectively suggested they could be lying.
I think, you know, the problem is that it's the heat of the moment. This transaction occurred in mere seconds, and you've got officers that may have some unknown inherent bias in trying to support their colleague who unfortunately was, like, the horrific tragedy here is that there's an officer that's still dead, and that family will never be emotionally put back together based on what's occurred here. But I think those officers clearly had their own view, and this is sort of the natural bias that you see when you do criminal trials. I've been a criminal lawyer for 20 years. I mostly do homicides. Often you have identification witnesses that say, "Look, I'm an eyewitness. I saw everything. This is the way it went." And then you look at the video surveillance, which is exactly what happened here, and it completely contradicts what they say occurred. And that, you know, it's that type of evidence that's critical, because otherwise we may be sitting here talking today about how Mr. Zamir just got found guilty based on three officers' opinions, which were clearly wrong.
We're talking with Toronto lawyer Monty McGregor, and I'm not asking this as a rude question to you, but I kept thinking of the Crown attorneys involved in this case and wondering, what is it like to be arguing a loser case?
Well, as a criminal defense lawyer, I think it happens a lot more to me. I always like to say they've always got, you know, when you're trying to make hands of cards, it's hard to do that when you're playing with twos and threes. And I can tell you, like, from my view, I always try to think my job is if they're guilty of something, it's to ensure they're guilty of the right thing. And so I actually use that analogy, John, that this is a lot like being a defense lawyer for these Crown attorneys, because the evidence pretty clearly looks like he's innocent. They're trying to marshal it as best they can, and they're doing their job because, you know, in as a lawyer, you're supposed to be the voice of the side that you're representing. You're not supposed to be the judge, and you're trying to put forth the best argument that you can. That's the inherent nature of the adversarial system. So they had a very difficult task. I know them personally. I know they were very moved by this, just like everybody yesterday when the verdict came down. It was elation on one side of the room, but it was sorrow on the other side. And you have to remember that's what happened. So I commend them for their approach and the way they tried to handle themselves. And thankfully, from my view, the right verdict came down in the end.
Thank you very much.
Juan, it's always a pleasure. Have a great day, and thanks for having me.
Monty McGregor is a Toronto lawyer. I realize it's a couple of days old, but came across a fun column by Susan Delacourt, who is a columnist I have a lot of time for. And it's based on an Abacus poll. And I really find this. Scott Reed was on the morning brief at 6:20 this morning, and he was saying he liked this approach to things in this Abacus poll, which was instead of what political leader are you going to vote for, or who do you trust, or who do you think has a hidden agenda, stuff like that. They took 10 scenarios and then compared how people felt about Pierre Poilievre and Justin Trudeau. So when it comes to who do you want hosting a party, 44% said they want Justin Trudeau hosting a party, hopefully not in blackface, compared to 27% for Poilievre. But Poilievre was seen by 42% of respondents to be better at negotiating a discount, compared to only 27% who wanted Justin Trudeau to haggle a lower price. That'd be a lot of fun, wouldn't it? You walk into the car dealership. This is Pierre Poilievre. He's the leader of the Federal Conservatives. And well, I'll just let him talk because we're hoping for you know, some money. Poilievre was also seen as the one who should hold the map during a road trip. I'm not sure who came up with that. Maybe an 80-year-old. We were actually speculating this weekend because we had to shuttle from one place to another for 3 days. And we said, how would we do this without navigation devices on our phone? And I said, do you even think if you showed a paper map to like a 20-year-old these days and said, get me from Toronto to, you know, South Dakota?